This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The new Trump administration's relationship to the media is off to a shaky start. New White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer berated the Washington Press Corps for what he called deliberately false reporting. And Trump spokesperson and counselor Kellyanne Conway defended what she called alternative facts. Here to talk about that and the changing job of journalist under the Trump administration, and frankly, it's been changing for quite a while, are Jeffrey Ballou. He is the president of the National Press Club and an editor with Al Jazeera. Jeffrey Ballou, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Ian Tuttle is a columnist with the National Review. Hello, Ian. Welcome back.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. And Courtney Radch is an advocacy director for the Committee to Protect Journalists. Hello, Courtney.
Hi there. Thanks.
I want to start with this this clip, actually. This is White House News Secretary Sean Spicer's remarks to the media on Saturday. Let's listen.
Before I get to the news of the day, I think I'd like to discuss a little bit of the coverage of the past 24 hours. Yesterday, at a time when our nation and the world was watching the peaceful transition of power, and as the president said, the transition in the balance of power from Washington to the citizens of the United States, some members of the media were engaged in deliberately false reporting.
All right, there we go. New White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer talking to the Washington Press Corps on Saturday, the numbers, crowd evaluations being part of this question over the accurate reporting. Courtney, what was your reaction to hearing those remarks from the new White House news secretary?
I mean, I think we're always concerned to see that this anti-press rhetoric has continued and even stepped up, and that the first press conference of the year was used as an opportunity to attack journalists and the press. It doesn't create a very good environment for the journalists to be working under.
Ian Tuttle, National Review, what do you think?
Well, it's certainly a continuation of what we've seen, as Courtney just said, and I think it's also a strong political message that, you know, Trump can credit his rise in part to an antagonistic attitude toward a media that a lot of the people who supported him didn't trust. And so this was sort of an opening shot to let them know that he's not going to back down despite being in the White House.
So that suggests a kind of political motivation. But what do you think in terms of the broader idea of sort of accountability, press freedom, access to the press? How did that sound to you, Ian Tuttle? What did you make of that?
Well, I mean, this is an administration that's during the campaign that, blacklisted journalists for a little while and then would bring them back once the coverage was favorable. And obviously that creates an environment that has, I think, two effects. One is it is a denial of access, although I don't think that's the most important factor. What I think it does, in fact, is it actually probably promotes the type of activist journalism from folks who do feel blacklisted or feel antagonized by the administration that might actually lead to worse reporting or more politically motivated journalism.
Well, tell us more about that. Do you think a reaction to what was said would lead to more advocacy journalism, did you say? What was the term?
Yeah, I think that's quite possible. I mean, we've seen something like that over the past 2 months where I think the coverage of Donald Trump's nominations to the cabinet has been much more antagonistic than we've seen going back a long, long time. I mean, the New York Times published something just flatly untrue about Rick Perry the other day, and when they were called on it by dozens of sources, they stood by it. Trump administration has reason to be upset about that, but the problem is their own reaction is going to prompt folks like the Times or others to, I think, continue more in that vein because they feel put upon by an administration that's taking a very strong stance against them.
Jeffrey Ballou at the National Press Club. Is the press perhaps overreacting and becoming sort of taking the bait and becoming unfair to Trump as it feels the pressure from his administration?
Not at all. I should say a couple of things by way of preliminary things. One, Sean is a member of the National Press Club, out of full disclosure.
Sean Spicer, the new secretary, yeah.
And I do know him. I've covered him and dealt with him for more than 20 years. That said, what he did on Saturday was not a press briefing. It was a statement. And he turned on his heels and walked out of the room. A briefing implies that there's questions and answers. Two, that the accusation that our colleagues engaged in false reporting is flat out absurd, because it's unacceptable, as I said in my statement through my blog, to insult and impugn the motives and credentialed journalists who are trying to engage in accurate reporting. Was there an inadvertent mistake made over the course of the weekend over the MLK bus and the fact it was obscured by somebody in the Oval Office while he was standing in the Oval Office during a photo op? Yes, but Zeke Miller owned up to that very quickly and apologized for it. Sean accepted that. But the whole sort of mantra that the press is ganging up on the Trump White House and trying to undermine it is absolutely false.
Well, Ian Tuttle, let me ask you about that. I mean, the idea that you would find these inaccuracies, and if they're coming from the press, note them, and either the press is going to, you know, the offending reporter or news organization either takes credit or responsibility or not. But you do it on a case-by-case basis and not make this kind of blanket sort of assertion that the press is out to get me.
Sure, that's quite right. And the Trump administration and the Trump campaign certainly didn't abide by that. But I also think that the critical media of Trump in general has been extraordinarily antagonistic to the point of publishing things that are untrue or dubious and then refusing to own up to them or to credibly source them, as we've seen in just the past week. And, you know, the flip side of that, of course, is that there's an entire new segment of the media that is pro-Trump and propagandistic, and that's a whole other section of this problem.
Well, but not. I mean, you're not talking about New York Times established news organizations. They're obviously blog sites. I mean, what do you mean when you say that? Are you talking about within established news organizations?
Well, you have multiple different problems here. One is established media that's going to have access, and CNN and New York Times and the rest. But look, this is a White House that just gave press credentials to Jim Hoft and Gateway Pundit. This is an administration that's putting on staff at least one Breitbart reporter, probably more to come. And, you know, I think it's important to recognize that while these aren't sort of quote unquote established media, they have massive, massive readerships. Jim Hoft, a Gateway Pundit, pushes just enormous media traffic on par with established news sources. This is part of the press atmosphere or part of the press ecosystem, I suppose, that is equally important when thinking about what the next 4 years and the relationship of the media to Trump will look like.
Courtney Ratchett, the advocacy director with the Committee to Protect Journalists, what effect do you think that this is going to have, again, on whether or not the public makes this distinction, and I don't know if they do, between long-established news organizations and sort of online media. But what effect do you think this is having on, let's talk about established media?
I think the problem is that we're seeing this attempt to sow doubt and confusion on these long-standing institutions, on the role of the press as the fourth estate in a really fundamental part of the democratic process is deeply disconcerting. When we see the denigration and marginalization of the press, it creates a framework in which authoritarianism leaders have to typically used to exert more power. We've seen this in Turkey, in Egypt, even in the Philippines. Not only does it create a framework for them to take power by delegitimizing these institutions, delegitimizing the idea of truth, but I would say it has a chilling effect. And, you know, perhaps there is this emphasis on reporters to be more activist, but I think that has to do with ensuring that they maintain their rights to a free press and to practice their profession freely and without intimidation and without fear. But I think that what we're seeing is that these type of comments, this trolling on Twitter, these attacks are having a chilling effect, and it's creating a dangerous precedent in which it leads to more attacks on journalists, and it creates a permissive environment in which it's seen as okay to attack the media without really realizing there are individuals who are these journalists trying to do their best.
Jeffrey Blue at the National Press Club, are you seeing any evidence of that?
Any evidence of...
Had this having a chilling effect that to some extent reporters are either pulling back or, and I think we talked about this a second ago, are becoming more aggressive and perhaps crossing the line?
I don't know about crossing a line, but I do see colleagues very sharpened in terms of wanting to be aggressive about making sure, A, that their stories are accurate, and B, to stay vigilant. I mean, when a source is openly hostile to you, in this case, I think the answer is and has been what I'm seeing is that people are being very strong on fact-checking, stronger than they were in many cases, 18 months ago.
Well, I'd like to talk about the effect of that, too, because there were just a string of inaccuracies that Donald Trump tweeted out in the aftermath of the inauguration, and this was sort of part of the controversy. And then we had Trump spokeswoman and counselor Kellyanne Conway on NBC's Meet the Press talking about Sean Spicer's comments. And here's what she told Chuck Todd.
Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office on day one.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true.
All right, Ian Tuttle, I want to talk about this because if you're pushing back on 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 facts a day, you sound like you're picking on them. That's when we start to get our most angry email is when we have to fact check, and we hit about our third one, and people say we're ganging up or we're picking on them. What about the appearance of seeming to be aggressive and picking on the president when in fact there's just a lot of facts to refute?
No, I think it's exactly right, and that was one of Trump's tactics during the. The campaign we saw was to sort of flood the zone and create a situation in which journalists were sort of overwhelmed. I think that's quite right, and it has created an environment in which there's so much coming at journalists that they're sort of struggling to keep their heads above water. I think that's entirely legitimate, but the responsibility on the part of journalists, also on the other side of that, is to make sure that you're actually appropriately fact-checking and then presenting the true information or the accurate information and restricting the editorializing as much as possible to the editorial page. And that's where I think that a lot of people have looked skeptically on the media is for blurring those lines.
Courtney Rash, I wonder how much of this is also a function of what we've seen changing in the media environment for the past at least decade and maybe longer because of the way platforms are changing and, the introduction of so many streams of media. Is this the continuation and maybe in extremis of a condition that we've seen happening to the press over the last 10 or 20 years?
So certainly we're seeing that, all of this has to be seen within the broader context of a shifting technological and economic environment in which the media operate, in which you have many more people and outlets doing journalism, but you also have, a new economics behind how people get their news and, how advertising is monetized. But I think that, what we do see is when these new platforms like Twitter, for example, are being used to attack the media and to attack individual reporters, that has a real impact on those reporters. We have heard reports at the Committee to Protect Journalists. We just have done a series on the transition to Trump about, insults that he has hurled at reporters. According to the New York Times, there were more than 600 tweets that were insulting reporters between June 2015 and December 6th. We saw reports about anti-Semitic tweets and how after Trump attacks a specific reporter, that leads to an increase in harassment and trolling online. And all of this is having a psychological and emotional toll on journalists. We've even seen, a Newsweek reporter who said he was attacked You know, he has epilepsy and was attacked on Twitter by someone trying to trigger a seizure. So, you know, some of this can get really nasty. Also, doxing, putting out the personal information of reporters who people are trying to attack has led to insecurity. Some reporters have reported that they don't feel secure, that they're worried about their children or their families. So I think we have to remember that there are, you know, real individuals behind this, and having a leader, you know, the president, take these sort of personal attacks on the media creates not just a chilling environment, but a real danger for those journalists, and seems to send a signal to others that it's okay to engage in these types of attacks.
And I understand the Committee to Protect Journalists is now giving advice to reporters domestically that it was only reserved for foreign coverage.
Traditionally, we have focused abroad on the dangerous countries where journalists are being imprisoned and killed for their work. But I will say that we actually turned inwards under the Obama administration to look at the impact that the administration came in promising to be the most transparent in history. And we wanted to look at that. And what we saw was that Obama used more the Espionage Act more than all other administrations combined, and that there was, you know, this war on leaks. But then there were some Department of Justice guidelines put in place and some steps taken. And we're really concerned about both the continuation of some of those trends under Trump, whether the Department of Justice is going to continue using the Espionage Act to prosecute leaks, and, you know, whether the people that he is nominating to these key positions are going to commit. For example, Jeff Sessions, is he going to commit to following the stricter guidelines for subpoenaing a journalist's records? And we've also seen journalists being stopped at U.S. borders for secondary screening, their devices being searched, being pulled out because they're journalists. So, you know, this is happening in a wide range of areas. And, you know, we're intending to keep vigilant, keep reporting on this, and make sure, you know, that there is accountability.
I want to thank all of my guests. Courtney Ratch is the advocacy director for the Committee to Protect Journalists, Ian Tuttle, a columnist with the National Review, and Jeffrey Ballou is the president of the National Press Club and an editor at Al Jazeera. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things, produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Sheldon Orman, and Laura Pelliser. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.